Now, you did mention exudates, and I think that's something you want to... I'd like you to explain what exudate is, because it's not that many people actually realise the importance of exudates. Can you just sort of explain what an exudate is?
Well, the exudates are just simply the...
Oh, very briefly. Don't expect to...
Yeah. The exudates are just simply the ability of the plant to extract from the atmosphere the carbon dioxide, and the carbon component of that is now transformed into various sugars that are converted in the leaf and then conveyed through the stem and down into the roots, so that there is the ability for the translocation of the gaseous carbon from the atmosphere, the carbon dioxide, into a solid form in the soil. Now, that solid form initially would be in the form of root growth, but also the sugars would be taken up by some of the microorganisms and then converted in their reproduction and their function in the soil food web into various forms of carbon as well. So basically that waxes and wanes, and some of the crops on a daily basis have sugars, in fact nearly all the crops have sugars that are translocated into the root system. Some of the trees would do it more on a seasonal basis and require the root mass to be generated for the different periods of time where they cannot do their own photosynthesis in the context of deciduous plants that require that growth period during the spring and summer, and then the energy going into the root zone during the autumn period to allow it to then get through the winter. So we have a very much a cyclical effect taking place, both on the grander scale like that or on a daily basis with grasses generating large amounts of sugars in their leaves during the peak time in the afternoon, early afternoon usually, and then translocating them back down into the root system, at which time then the soil microorganisms had the ability to take up the benefit of the energy that was delivered from the sun.
Well, thank you, Gerhard, for that explanation. You also made mention of the soil food web. Can you just very briefly, like in 1 minute, explain what the soil food web is, so that it's not just a term that we just use? There's a good understanding of what the soil food web really means.
All right. Well, I'll start that little discussion simply on the question that you raised before. We spoke about fungicides and insecticides, and how they've been applied often willy-nilly in the context of trying to deal with a problem, but unknowingly creating another problem. Now, the soil food web has in its whole structure the fundamental of requiring good levels and diversity of bacteria and fungi as the simplest life forms, upon which then they're predated by protozoa and nematodes, and of various forms, upon which then they are predated upon by mites and microarthropods, and upon which then you've got macroarthropods, and you've got earthworms feeding on bacteria, and then you've got small mammals starting to feed on those, and then birds, of course, as well. Now, what's important is to recognise that when we do put insecticides out there, that oftentimes we're actually taking away that third level of organisms, the third or fourth level of the mites. They're insects, beetles and animals that do perform a function in the soil by decaying down material and also consuming the products of bacteria and fungi and protozoa. So immediately we break out one of those levels, then we disconnect the whole lot and it has to rebuild itself. And unfortunately, some of our practices have not been generous to any of those functions of the soil food web. So we're looking at a number of different trophic levels of different life forms, and they all rely on each other. And if one of them should, in its entirety, be removed, then it becomes a very tenuous affair to actually have a functioning soil.
So thanks for that explanation, Gerhard, because I think it's absolutely vital that that the food web is it's appreciated, and you just don't nuke certain parts of the soil food web, because as it's more recently been stated, we've got rid of a lot of the birds in the farming areas, so we've got a locust problem mainly because there's a lack of birds. So
yeah.
it's quite vital that we don't upset anything, whether it's in the soil or whatever, so we don't get things out of balance.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Gerhard, when it comes to if farmers do have to use sometimes fungicides and insecticides, well, they don't have to, but they do use them. According to Hamish Mackay, he's said, well, if you're using biodynamic horn manures, you'd go out there four times afterwards to counteract that, which seems to be one. Well, I couldn't imagine any wheat farmer going out four times after they sprayed one of those toxic products. So how would you sort of see it, what a farmer can do if he has to use a toxic product?
Well,
sometimes
you do have to resort to that that drastic measure to save a crop or save a condition or position. But then the ability is there to actually redeem that simply by managing microbiology as well as the structure and the conditions that you're in. And probably the best way to do that is to make compost and compost tea.
Right, which are full of humic materials. So you do hear of humic materials being used as buffering toxic products, or in this case you're mentioning they can rescue the situation. You might like to elaborate a bit on that, Gerhard.
Yep. Yeah, your compost and compost teas are a very, very good tool to be using to simply bring together that whole range of base microorganisms that are usually very sensitive to over-cultivation or over-fertilisation or over-use in the form of fungicides and insecticides. So really it's about recognising that sometimes we need to go down that path, and then we can recover it by the application and judicious monitoring thereafter as well, to make sure that the effect that we're expecting from it would in fact be received or achieved. And we do that quite regularly with the compost teas. They're a very useful tool that, and particularly with a year like this year where we've had a number of people with crops that have been on the verge of failing due to the hot, humid weather and the tropical weather that we've had so far south, and the continuous floods further up north, where they've had to run along with a fungicide, and then we'd come in with a compost tea that's appropriately made. Once the fungicide has had its effect, remove the toxins from the compost tea, and then put a highly fungal compost tea over the top of that to restore the fungal balance again as well. Oftentimes, if there's not too much disease pressure on, then we can actually use the fungal compost tea as a means of providing a probiotic preventative in the first place. But if the pressure's too great, then that may not work. So there is there is another tool now available to a person who's prepared to look at using compost and compost tea that they didn't have in their armoury of tools to manage their crop and deliver it as a cash crop at the end of the day.
When you're talking about compost and compost teas or those sort of liquids, that Dr. Elaine Ingham makes it quite clear that the compost tea is a very good form of humic acid And it's a very cheap and economical way of actually producing a humic acid. And she sees that the humic acid is something that does help the soil and buffer the toxic product.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a fair statement?
Oh, most definitely. And again, it gets back to what we were saying before about what is humic acid and where does it come from, and it derives primarily from the microorganisms in the soil that have played their role and have now got in their body carbon sequestered in a very stable form. Whether it's the microorganisms in a compost or whether it's a vermicompost is another one that's very good. Anything that's had some biological process to now stabilise and hold the nutrients in place will be of value to a farming system. And that composting could in fact take place out in the field as well. And we often, with permanent pastures and permanent crops, we ensure that the growers are able to monitor their soils to make sure that they are actually nutrient cycling and building their soils up without necessarily having to put on compost and compost teas. But generally we find for people who start down that path that it's always favourable to be using compost and compost teas to inoculate the soils and to accelerate the process. And if there has been a harsh season or harsh conditions to deal with, then you would give it a kick start to once that condition has been removed or depleted, then you would give it a kick start with compost or compost teas as well.